All right, everybody, welcome back to the Dylan Jamelli podcast. So we have a very, very, very exciting time today that I have been waiting and looking forward to. So my guest today, she does quite a bit, and I've already learned a ton from her. I'm sure many of you have heard of her, but just some of her credentials first. She is a board certified specialist in gastroenterology and internal medicine. She has a bachelor's degree in behavioral neuroscience with honors from Lehigh University and a master's degree in neuropsychology from New York Vernon University. She also has a medical degree from the New York College of Osteopathic Medicine, and she is the CEO and founder of Terrain Health. And she did that because she wanted to practice healthcare, not sick care. And she's known for being an expert on the gut microbiome and long COVID. So we got a ton of stuff to get into today. So my friends, welcome Dr. Robin Rose.
Thanks, Dylan, for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm so excited to Absolutely. Be here with you. Educate your audience on all that we can talk about.
100%. Well, everybody, I've had the blessing of knowing Robin now for several months, and she's going to be doing some tests on me as well and help me out with some things I have concerns about. And she is just, beyond being highly respected, just a wealth of knowledge. But beyond that, what I would say is just a huge breath of fresh air because of the way that she goes about her teaching, the compassion that she shows, and the knowledge that she has. So we're going to dig into a lot of different topics today that I think some people are either scared to touch on or don't know a lot about, have misconceptions, have like hearsay things. So that's why she's here, to help and educate. So Dr. Robin, let's first just kind of start with your background a little bit. Why gastroenterology? Why internal medicine? What turned you on to that? What fascinated you with that?
Yeah. So when I was doing my training in internal medicine, it was funny. I actually thought I was going to maybe specialize in hematology, oncology. Then I thought I was going to do cardiology. And I landed on gastro because I just like the system. And I struggled with some irritable bowel syndrome myself. Maybe that's TMI, but I did. And I also liked procedures. Like, I wanted to be a proceduralist. So you do upper endoscopies, colonoscopies, and you get to do really cool things when you're in there with the scope, like stop bleeding ulcers and take out really large masses or polyps that could turn into cancer or that maybe are cancer. And you have a lot of opportunities to, like, save people from surgery sometimes by being able to utilize the instruments and do the procedure the correct way. So that's why I went into GI. And I really, like I said, I do love the system. It's like, you know, the hole in the donut, you know, everything from your mouth down to your anus. And then it's also your liver, your pancreas, your spleen, your gallbladder. So it's a big system to have fun with and diagnose a lot of different conditions and diseases and obviously treat them. So that's why I chose it. Then it was a perfect segue when I went into the functional integrative world, right? Or the longevity state, to transition. It was very natural for me to transition into being a gut microbiome specialist, or really specializing and honing in on that area. And also, before I even went into the functional medicine space, I always gravitated towards treating the gut microbiome, like for years, like right when I got out of my fellowship and I was in the conventional world. You know, my two senior partners, who were both males, they were like, "What are you doing?" Like, they're like, "Why are you not scoping all these people?" They're like, "How are you getting them better?" And, you know, I was using nutrition, I was using probiotics, I was using all these things. And they're like, "What?" And then they started jumping on the bandwagon and doing things. So anyway, I always gravitated toward trying to treat people more naturally, right? And trying to get more to the root cause and not symptomatic management, pill for every ill, you know. So that's always been something that I was passionate about anyway. So it was a pretty natural move for me to go into this space.
Awesome. So and that's, I align so well with people. I'm so blessed to talk to people like you. And that's why I gravitate to people like you that have kind of taken your knowledge base and went and done something about it on your own and taken control of the situation and help people in the way that they really don't get it from normal healthcare. And so when you start studying gut microbiome, you did that like quite a long time ago, correct?
Well, it's funny. So when I first got out of my fellowship and I started practicing, I started using probiotics and prebiotics, more probiotics. But we don't learn about any of that. Like in training, I was like,
no.
And I don't know why, but I literally had a stack of like papers like this high of every article and any article I could get my hands on to, you know, basically, you know, understand like why this helps people stay healthy, how it impacts your immune system, why people that take probiotics or have a healthy gut microbiome like have less days missed at work or less days of an illness when they get sick, if they're sick, you know, all these different things, right? And so I always had this knowledge to learn that type of medicine. But unfortunately, when I finally was doing both, when I was sort of in my conventional practicing 30 plus patients a day, I say practicing mixed medicine, right? Like a revolving door of patients in and out, and only being able to, you know, spend 10 minutes with them or 15 minutes with them and wanting to really heal them, I couldn't do that. And I, you know, was really depressed about it. It was really upsetting. And I really felt like I called myself a charlatan. I remember to someone, I felt like I wasn't. Like once I finished all my coursework at the IFM and all the certifications, like I was like, I couldn't even apply it in my conventional practice. There was no way for me. And that's when I felt like I was like a fake. I was like, I can't even like really heal people. This,
right.
You know? And yeah. So I just finally, in the middle of COVID, literally June 2020 of COVID, I gave my notice and I just was like, it's just going to work out. Like, I just was like, let it work out. Like, I was just like, I don't know. And I just started Terrain Health, you know, and that's how it started.
Well, when your heart's in the right place, it always works out eventually. It just does.
I don't know. I think it's still working out, I guess, to some degree. Like, you know, it wasn't the best. My husband at the time was not happy about me.
You have to do what makes you happy and what fulfills you. And that's it. Otherwise, you're going to be miserable and resentful forever. So I can tell you right now, there's plenty of people thankful for what you do. Where I was kind of going with the gut microbiome thing is it's gotten so more prevalently talked about and discussed now, where people are realizing that that is one of, if not the key issue to almost every problem we have. Essentially, it's either a cell problem, and if it's not a problem with your cells, it's your gut, right? It's one of the two. Everything's originating from there. When do you think was the turn for that, where that became, because like for me, studying this and being around it, I was blessed enough when I met my wife, she was working at like a natural health place, but this man that was in there that everybody thought that was crazy that owned it, and this was like 2011, was way ahead of the curve and was talking about this. And I was like, what are you talking about, when she started telling me? But come to find out, you know, it's gotten so prevalent. When do you feel like it really took hold that, okay, people are catching on, now we understand this is really a significant issue to like the core of all the problems?
So here's the thing, like I wasn't really heavily vested in this space until like 2009, right?
Okay.
So, but if you look back at all the people that have influenced this space so much, like Mark Hyman and, you know, those, they've been talking about the gut microbiome forever, you know? Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think especially since, you know, the pandemic, it's become very hot topic. You know, it's been published in mainstream media, you know, newspapers, talked about like on television, on, you know, news shows much more often, particularly like probably in the last like 5 years. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it was definitely getting hot probably at least 5 years before that. But still, as hot as we think it is, and we notice this, the vast majority of the population still doesn't understand or get it, nor does the conventional medical world either.
No, I know. It's wild too, because you would think that more people would be onto this now and understand it, especially with all the studies and the talk and the people behind it. But I guess the best we can do is just keep putting out the info. And I interviewed Dr. Gundry a couple weeks ago, so you know we got into that heavy, you know, and it's really nice to learn and understand the ways to combat this, the things to look for, because a lot of people don't know, and they just start taking any probiotic under the sun, don't even know what it does.
It's all about really healing the intestinal mucosal barrier, right? Like really healing the leaky gut and getting the good bacteria to grow, right? You know, probiotics are great, you know, to a certain extent, and especially you have to be careful about which one you're using. And they're sort of like tourists, you know, they're like passing by, exerting their effect, you know, and then they're leaving, right? It's more like the post postbiotics, which are the metabolites that those good bacteria make, that's what's the most important. That's what is influencing structure, function, and influencing different systems in our body. It's really those metabolites, or what I call the postbiotics.
Okay, so let's do a rundown here. Let's try to give a good explanation, because I can't, you know, there's not too many people that I could think of better than you to explain this and break this down for people. So let's do this. Let's make it as easy as possible, but still get into like the full rundown. One, how do we decipher if we have like a leaky gut issue? What are some either blood markers to look for, or some side effects, trigger points, things like that? And then two, how do we go about addressing that issue?
Okay. So you might laugh from my answer, but first of all, I think the vast majority of the population, especially if you're living in the United States and eat a standard American diet, you have some form of leaky gut, or okay, at least a little bit of it. So I say to many of my patients, unless you're a cow and you live in a bubble and you eat grass all day, you probably have a little bit of leaky gut, because everything from, right, Dylan, from our exposome, like all the environmental toxins, glyphosate, which is now pervasive. It doesn't matter even if you're like not eating foods with glyphosate in it, because that's being sprayed in this. It's being sprayed even like on golf field, like on golf courses, you know, and then it travels in the air and then we're inhaling it, right? So it's like all of those things are gonna, you know, destroy the gut microbiome. Your refined sugar, ultra processed foods, alcohol, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, I don't know, the list goes on and on. Forget about the course of the antibiotic, but one antibiotic, one dose of an antibiotic kills off thousands of the good friendly bacteria. So we're exposed all the time to all of these things, right? So that gut microbiome, which is obviously influenced heavily by our epigenetics, right? How we interact and adapt to the world around us, is always, it's like in this dynamic state, right? So We're always trying to keep balance in that microbiome. That's how I think of it. So I think we all have to be doing something on some level to keep that intestinal mucosal barrier intact, and to keep really good balance in the gut, right? The good, the bad, and the friendly bacteria, like, in check, okay? And in balance. So there's always stuff that you should be doing. Even not moving, you know, being sedentary, even smoking kills, you know, the tobacco, nicotine, you know, that has a bad impact on the gut microbiome. Even when you have cortisol dysregulation and, you know, your vagal tone is poor, all of that is messing with the health of your gut and your gut, you know, your gut microbiome in that barrier. So you have to be working, unfortunately, because of the, you know, if we were hunter-gatherers back in the day and we were going to sleep when, you know, when the sun went down and we're falling asleep in front of the fire that we lit naturally, and we're just like eating off the land and the berries and the plants and, you know, hunting when we had to and being in feast or famine and all those things, we'd have really good gut microbiomes probably, but that's not how we evolved. And so based on how we've evolved, we now have to pivot and work harder at keeping ourselves healthier and keeping that gut microbiome healthier.
Got it. Okay, perfect. Yeah, 100%. You're the expert. You can't ask me, but of course it's okay.
No, but I meant, did that make sense? Like, I was.
Yes.
Like,
no, I'm 100%. Absolutely. So you were talking about prebiotics and postbiotics and all of those different things.
Yeah.
Can we just give like.
Yeah, you want to talk about that?
I do, because okay, it's very confusing.
Yeah, it's well, so confusing. So confusing.
Can you just say, okay, first of all, can you just say what the heck is a prebiotic and a postbiotic? Yeah. And two, what do we need and what don't we need?
Okay, so prebiotics are the food that the bacteria in your gut are feeding off of.
Okay. Right?
And the interesting thing is, and you can look at this in a lot of different ways, but giving yourself a prebiotic or a specific prebiotic might not be good for one person, but be good for another person, because you each have your own unique microbial blueprint, right? And so based on the bacteria that are there, what prebiotic is right for you, right? So I always say, you know, really having that beautiful, diversified diet of all the colors of the rainbow, right? And, you know, sticking to either side of the grocery store, like where you're in the produce section or right? The meat, the fish and that stuff, like eating anything that man hasn't gotten in the way of and staying away from that standard American diet, you're going to give yourself the prebiotics, like from all the veggies and the fruit, you know, all those things, right? So, you know, resistant starches, all that stuff is going to be really important in helping diversify and feed that microbiome. Sure, there's different things like inulin and so forth, you know, all, but again, it's, you don't know what each person's blueprint is, right? Unless you test every single person and know that. And then you can maybe match that prebiotic to the population that's, you know, living there. And of course, if you took maybe, you know, something that has a bunch of different prebiotics in it, that's always helpful, of course. But eating foods that specifically have these prebiotics in them. And, you know, at the end of the, I could give you a list of like really good prebiotic like foods that give the microbiome that food that they need that like have more prebiotics in it is really healthy. I mean, the other thing that people talk about too are fermented foods.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Which are awesome and they help feed the gut microbiome well. So like kimchi and sauerkraut and kombucha and all those lovely things, right? Anything pickled, right? The problem is in this day and age and with all the chronic illness we're seeing, a lot of people are very sensitive to that. Right? Mast cell activation, mast cell issues, histamine issues are like through the roof right now. So when you give yourself fermented foods, it's going to exacerbate that. So once you get your gut microbiome in balance again, right? And you've controlled for this mast cell or histamine issue, then it's okay to start bringing in those foods again so that you don't trigger your that histamine response. So I digress. Sorry, but I just felt like I should say that. But
no, please.
They are great. And then, okay, so those are your pre, that's your pre.
Right.
Your pre situation, okay? Then you get to your probiotic. So you're pre and now you're pro.
Yes.
So the probiotic are the bacteria, right? Those bacteria. So right. That's why when you take a probiotic, there's like so many different ones on the market. There's like every single, you know, species of lactobacillus or every single species of bifidobacteria, right? And again, it's like, you want diversity. You want all those different things. And then there's, you know, some of them have Streptococcus thermophilus in it. And then you have your other class of probiotics, which are your spore-forming bacteria,
yes,
are fantastic too. And a lot of people lean towards those because the spore former, right? Those are like the missing organisms, right? Like, you know, these spore formers, those bacteria, a lot of them have been lost over the decades from urbanization, deforestation, and industrialization, right? So giving us back those types of bacteria are great. And then those help actually the other bacteria to grow. So that's why a lot of people do really well with those probiotics. So like Megaspore Biotic, for example, that's by Microbiome Labs. That's a great
Megaspore.
Yeah, I think Zach Bush has his Ion. What is it? I forget his product. I use this other product I love called Rhizo Health, which is from unmined soil from South Africa. And it's all of the lost organisms that have been identified in this unmined soil. You can find unmined soil in different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. And because of what it's suspended in and because of what it does once it gets into your body, it actually behaves as a pre, pro, and postbiotic. So anyway, there's lots of different things on the market like this that are super helpful, you know? And the probiotic, like I said, the spores are nice because they're sort of like getting in there and doing their job and getting those other bacteria to grow, where maybe some of the other probiotics aren't sticking as much. But as they pass through, they're exerting their effect and they're getting those post-metabolites to grow.
Okay.
To be synthesized. I don't know why I said grow. But, and the other thing I will say, I'm sorry, my head, I feel like I have all these things to tell you, is when you take a probiotic too, in the probiotic, is a prebiotic usually because the bacteria has to live inside the capsule and stay alive. So
okay.
A lot of times when you're taking a probiotic, you have some prebiotic mixed in with the probiotic too.
Okay. So
is that confusing? Tell me.
No,
tell me.
No. Well, okay. So like my mentor several years ago told me to take spore probiotics and I'm looking at this like it's a foreign language. Honest. Just, I'm normally
it's
like really.
Bacteria. It's like.
Yes. And we didn't get into the like what's the difference and why. So first question, if you're taking a spore probiotic,
right,
do you need to take a regular probiotic with that, or are you getting what you need from that?
You're likely getting what you need from it. But okay. I will tell you this. I sometimes will add, like, and this is just because I'm crazy, but so I test, like I do a lot of tests. I was doing a lot of testing on the gut microbiome, like next generation sequencing shotgun, you know, like real stuff, like
cool
stuff. And, you know, it seems that in the post-pandemic world after getting COVID or the vaccine, that the bifidobacteria species has been wiped out. Okay. And even the phylum, so the phylum, which is the class, right, that the all those different species and families of bacteria fall under, which is your actinobacteria phylum, that's wiped out in many people too, which is not good. Because if you don't have your bifidobacteria species, then your innate immunity, your innate immune response is going to suffer, hugely. And also, those bifidobacteria also control a lot for the histamine response too, and also help produce short-chain fatty acids, which is a postbiotic or metabolite that's very important for a bazillion different things. So anyway, what was I saying? Oh my God, now I like lost my train of thought. What were we talking about? Like, oh, the bifido. Yeah. So I've been giving people, so I'll have them take, let's say, the spore forming, like a megaspore or the rhizo, and then I'll have them do like true bifido, like a true bifido pro, US enzymes make it, and I'll have them do that at night. Now, like I said, is it sticking? Maybe it's exerting its effect, whatever. I know US Enzymes, they had told me back, you know, a few years ago when I did a lot of work with them, that they had tested it and they found that it was sticking, you know, like it was present in the gut, but, you know, probably not for long periods of time. But anyway, I want people to sort of build their bifido back up. So I was throwing that in there too, but the spore former should theoretically get the bifido to start to grow as well.
Okay. So for somebody starting out, to make it simple for them, that really just taking a spore probiotic in the evening would be sufficient in your view?
I do. To make life easy. That's my
go-to.
That would be
good too. Would you take that without food then? Is that, or with food, or how do you do that?
It doesn't matter. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're taking antibiotics, you want to take it away from the antibiotic. I forget with megaspore. Probably better on an empty stomach. That's why it's better to take at bedtime, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, I think so.
So empty stomach, spore in the evening. That's a good way to get going. And then if that's not, if you're still having issues, then we would take a deeper dive and a deeper look then, correct?
Right. But then we have to, we didn't go to the postbiotics.
Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about the postbiotic. So the postbiotic, that means it's the stuff that the bacteria or the probiotics or the gut bacteria in your microbiome are synthesizing and making. So they synthesize and make thousands of metabolites, which significantly impact our health. Okay. And these metabolites, you know, cross the gut barrier and get into our bloodstream and impact other parts of our body and organ systems, right? And some cross the blood-brain barrier. And, you know, and some metabolites could be good if they're coming from the right bacteria, but some could be bad.
Right.
Right. And like, so for example, like LPS, right? Lipopolysaccharide, like everyone's heard of LPS. Like it's a marker we look at, lipopolysaccharide, and that is bad. That means you have like a lot of bad, you know, gram-negative bacteria living in your gut, and it's secreting this bad metabolite, right?
Right, right.
But then you have amazingly fantastic metabolites like your short chain fatty acids, which many people have heard of.
Right.
So, and those short chain fatty acids like do a million different things, you know, everything from, you know, restoring health and balance to the integrity of the intestinal mucosal barrier, keeping it intact, you know, making sure the tight junctional proteins are functioning properly, cardiovascular health, metabolic health, like all those things, right?
Right.
So that's what the host. So I believe that probably in the future, like products that really show efficacy, good efficacy with these postbiotics or these metabolites is where we're going to go, because it's really that's the end result, right? That's the end game. It's not the fact that those bacteria are living there. It's what are they doing for us and what are they making for us? They're living there on purpose to make these things so that we are healthy, right?
Right.
So it's going to be all much, I think it's going to be more about the postbiotics or these metabolites.
Got it. So,
and there's this one I'm plugging for people. Not, I don't even know. I have no ties to any of these people, by the way. But so there's a wonderful product that I used for quite some time and I still use it. And it's called Theanabiotic. Okay. And Theanabiotic is all of the thousands of these postbiotics or these metabolites that we're talking about. So what they do is they get donor stool that's screened, right? And then they take the stool and they autoclave the crap out of it, right? So that then what's left, so all anything, any like protein, RNA, like any bacteria, it's all dead. Okay, so that's dead. And what's left are these beautiful postbiotics or metabolites. And then they encapsulate that. So it's like freeze-dried poop. And people like to tell my patients, they're like, ew. But no, I mean, you know, fecal microbial transplants, you know, can reverse and regress like many chronic disease states and conditions, right? This is being studied all over the world. So this is a way around that because you're giving them from a healthy donor, right? From a really healthy donor who has like a perfect, you know, looking microbiome, you're giving people the metabolites from their microbiome. Does that make sense? And that's a great product and it works great. You know, people do great on it. That's
laughing because I pulled this up to look at it and it says right on here, good shit guarantee. And it says, are you our next unicorn pooper? And it says they're looking for donors.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So really, really important, you know? And I even believe, like, I don't want to get like, I know it's like such a touchy subject, but I will say that because of how high they heat it and it's autoclaved and any protein will even die, that if people are worried about the spike protein, you know, about, you know, because a lot of people are worried about if that person was vaccinated, if their spike protein, that would be killed.
Okay.
I believe. Got it. So I think it's still a good product.
Okay. So let's do this then. So Spore Probiotic and the one that you had recommended there was.
I like Megaspore Biotic. Microbiomes and I like Rhizo Health. RHIZO Health.
Got it.
Rhizo Health. I think it's rhizohealthus.com, their site. Microbiome Labs, everyone, you know, it's microbiomelabs.com. I think. But those are two of the ones I love.
Okay.
I use all the time in my patients.
So we're going to do one of those, like a spore, and then you recommend also taking a postbiotic along with that?
Listen, if you can afford getting the Theanabiotic, I think it's wonderful. Especially, like, you know, for maintenance, you know, it's not a forever thing either. Like if you just want to repopulate and get those postbiotics in there, like I think you can take it for 3 to 6 months, right? If you have a chronic condition though, you might want to take it for longer, like 6 to 9 at like maybe a little bit of a higher dose and then back down to maintenance for a few months and then just keep it around if you start to not feel great, you know? That's like not, you don't have to stay on that forever because you're just trying to get those postbiotics like in there, doing their thing and exerting their effects again.
Let's say somebody can't afford that. Is there another alternative they could go with?
For postbiotic, I have to look up. I'm not, nothing.
Okay. But you are saying though that to take that maybe 3 to 6 months and then you don't have to take it for a while.
Yeah, but the Rhizo does fulfill all three criteria, pre-pro post, based on what's in it and what it's doing in your body.
Really? Okay. Okay. So Rhizo Health fulfills everything.
Personally, I think so. Yes.
Got it. Okay, cool. All right. So here's another question. This was actually sent in by my wife via text message while I'm talking to you.
So,
yes. She's in the other room listening and she has a question. I think it's a good question.
I love that we sort of have like a live studio audience that can ask.
Yeah, we do.
I love that.
She said to ask you if we still need probiotics if we're eating fermented foods on a daily basis, like kimchi or sauerkraut or things like that.
Yeah, so people would argue no, you know, that like you probably have a much healthier microbiome and, you know, and if you feel good, right, and you're pooping good and you don't have GI symptoms, you don't have any bizarre conditions and your blood work looks, I say no. I think if you're giving yourself all of these things and you're eating, that's a problem. But the problem is most people don't, right? They're not eating that way. So when you don't have like a super clean diet, you're not eating that way, it's going to be really hard, like I said, not to have some dysbiosis, not to have some leaky gut, so on and so forth.
Well, and also people like, for instance, Queenie told my mom to go shop for kimchi and you know, sauerkraut, and my mom wasn't buying the right one. And we had to fix that. A lot of people don't know, too. It needs to be like the refrigerated ones and, you know, like the ones off the shelf are not the ones to buy. So
I mean, in some of those, I think the kombucha, doesn't it have the probiotics in it, too?
I believe it does. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that it does. Like, yeah,
those things are great. I mean, and if you don't have a histamine issue and you're healthy and your gut's healthy, those are awesome. You should totally be drinking those things. And absolutely.
Okay, cool. So we've got that kind of down now and that discussed. So I think that's a big one that a lot of people have confusion on. I know it's tricky and there's so many things marketed and different brands and different BS. So that was a good cover. Now,
yeah. Oh, and what, you know, wait, hold on. One other thing that I just thought of.
Yeah.
Another red flag, I believe, is, you know, like when you get when you buy Megaspore, when you buy these from these good companies, you really don't technically need to refrigerate it, right? And there was like this fallacy sort of like, oh, it has to be in the refrigerator. No. You know, these probiotics are freeze dried. And if they're made the right way, right? And they have a prebiotic in them and they're made the right way and they're freeze dried, they can live at room temperature for like they're very shelf stable for a very long time.
Okay. Right?
So to me, when they say it has to be refrigerated, that's like a red flag. The other red flag to me is when you have so many billions and billions of organisms, that means to me that that's not a stable product, right? And that those organisms are dying off pretty quickly, you know? So you want like a shelf stable, freeze dried product for sure. That's the other thing. Now, the Rizo, it's shelf stable too. And it's a liquid though, just FYI.
Yeah.
But it is shelf stable.
It looks like it's sold out. I'm going to look when we get off the thing, but off the podcast, but it looks like it's sold out everywhere, but I will find it.
I have it on my where I keep all my COVID protocols. I have a bunch of the Rizo because it's part of I put it in my protocols to help rebuild the gut. And it's at MediCoreRx.com. You could get Rizo there too.
Okay. Well, I'm sold.
And it's for the same price.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to order that there. Go ahead.
No, I said anyway.
Well, here, I was looking and I'm curious here. So on that Microbiome Lab site, there's products and I want to ask about these.
Asked
so
me. Yeah.
Things like addressing gut flora, for example, like is one of the things on here that I see. And so to talk about that first and then the mucosal support, things like that, are those necessary or what?
If somebody, we didn't want to get complicated, but we could get a little complicated.
Let's get complicated.
So like if you want to restore, right, the integrity to the intestinal mucosal barrier, yes, like their product, for example, like that Mega Mucosa, right, which has all these different serum immunoglobulins. I think it's Mega IgG2. So that has all these bovine serum immune globulins in them. And that is very helpful to restoring the gut integrity, the mucosal barrier, for sure.
Got it. Okay.
And giving it the immune support it needs and all that jazz. So is the, and then there's also, what else do they have? They have the Mega Mucosa, I think that has, I forget, what is it? Do you have it up there? What's in it? Can you look at it? I forget.
Yes,
what's in
I will look. So I've got Mega Mucosa here. Well, I got two screens going so I can look side to side. It contains, let me get the back.
Sorry, IgA. I forgot what's in that.
So we got L-proline,
L-cysteine.
Yes, amino acids. Yeah, immunoglobulin G, M, and A.
Okay, IG, yes. Okay, so that has the immunoglobulins in it. Right, okay. So that's very good for restoring the leaky gut, the integrity of that, you know, gut. That
okay.
Gut barrier. And then what was in the, because I get confused with products, I'm sorry. I don't know. And then what is in the Mega IgG 2000?
Let's find that one. Okay, Mega IgG 2000.
I think that has all the bovine serum immune globulins.
That has serum-derived immunoglobulin bovine concentrate, immunoglobulin G, right. 900 milligrams.
So that is better. That's going to help. So the Mega Mucosa is more, so I got them, I'm sorry, audience, I messed it. So the Mega Mucosa is very good for, again, restoring health imbalance to that intestinal mucosal barrier, okay? The serum bovine immune globulin is helpful for that, yes, to some degree, but also to helping get the different bacteria to grow better also and help with the dysbiosis as well.
Okay. So the Mega IG is the one for the leaky gut.
It's great immune support too.
Okay. So Mega IG leaky gut, correct? Okay. Perfect. All right. Well, we got some protocols here. So I'm taking so many notes. I
think Microbiome Lab should sponsor this segment. I'm kidding.
I think I'm gonna send them a copy of this and say,
you really should.
If you want this released, you know, we got to get some benefit here. No. You know what? I like to promote the products I believe in, but I like to just talk about whatever's good. There's so many,
and all the different companies are so good.
Everything doesn't have to be an affiliate code.
Okay. And like, you know, it was funny. I was thinking about that the other day. I opened up my cabinet where I stash all my vitamins that I haven't opened up yet, you know, because I hate running out. And I was like, wow, I was like, I'm really just so good. Like, I really support everybody because I have like Pure Encapsulations, Microbiome Labs, Integrative Therapeutics, Vital Nutrients. Like, it's like I have everyone, you know, I have everyone and everything, you know, Designs for Health. Like, it's just amazing.
Oh, it's important to learn, you know, about all of these and to just be honest about what works and what doesn't, not just because you sell it.
Oh, and biotics research. Yeah. Like different companies, you know, they have, I feel like I just gravitate to different companies for different things. You know, it just, I don't know.
Definitely. Okay. Well, let's switch gears here. Obviously, you know this. And to be honest with you, I didn't even tell you this. So I told you I tested positive for COVID, but then I took another test that said I was negative, and then I took another one. I had a two-piece test from CVS, both said positive, and then I bought three other different tests that all said negative. So I don't know what the hell I had, okay? But I didn't feel good at all.
It felt really crappy.
Yeah, I felt horrible. And so you put me on a very nice protocol that I've never done, and within 3 days, which is by far the shortest, because I've had COVID like 6 or 7 times, literally. Right. And some of them have been wretched. Some of them have been pretty bad, but manageable. But I mean, I had a like 2.5-3 week one time. And it seems like they've been different quite a bit too. This was by far the shortest. I don't want to jinx it because I'm still not 100%. But let's talk first about the protocol.
You're on all the good things. You're not on everything. You're missing one major product, but I pivoted and made sure I got like a bunch of the stuff that was in that product into you, you know?
Perfect.
So, yes, you have to be resourceful. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about your protocol here, because there's so much, bullshit that people talk and go over and act like something doesn't work. At least now we can actually talk about it because people are more up to speed and actually grasp the concept of what was not true and what's true. Let's talk about your protocol that I can 100% confirm absolutely worked like a charm. Because three days ago, you want to
squash the viral load fast. Like you don't want the virus to get like to start replicating out of control, because for every virus, you're producing tons of spike protein, right?
Right.
And you want that spike protein like gone as soon as possible.
Okay.
Should we talk about a few concepts first and then why?
Yes. Instead of giving a protocol, let's explain why, like really why, not just because, or you better do the science. Well, let's talk about the science.
Right. Okay. So if there's a few, I'm not going to get into everything because everyone always yells at me when I do that. And they're like, that was really complicated. And I didn't understand that. So I'm going to try to be as simple as possible. And then you guide me to tell me if I'm being.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So there's a few concepts I want everyone to understand. Okay, after 5 years of research and being like knee deep in this forever, you have to understand two things first. Okay, there's two drivers of the disease. Okay, or the what I call post-COVID conditions or post-vax conditions. Okay, clearly in the vaccine, it's the spike protein, right? Because that's all that's in the vaccine is the spike protein. There's no other proteins in it, right? Like it's the spike protein. And then from the virus, it is the spike protein, but the spike protein and the virus itself also causes a lot of issues as well. Okay. So And I'm going to explain why. So the virus is what's called a bacteriophage. Everyone's like, what the hell is that? So a bacteriophage means that the virus invades the bacteria in our biome. So I'm going to stick with the gut microbiome because this has been proven by Dr. Carlo Brogna, Simone Cristoni, and their group in Italy. And they published this a few years ago. And the fact that nobody really knows this is very sad. So I want to get this out to your audience. Okay.
Yes.
So the bacteria in the gut microbiome get invaded with the virus. The virus then replicates, takes over the bacteria. Okay. And, you know, you can see in the papers published by Brogna et al. That under the microscope, these bacteria are no longer really bacteria and they're not doing their job anymore because they've been taken over by the virus, okay?
Right.
And they're teeming with SARS-CoV-2 virus. So like if you could imagine like a circle and then all these little tiny circles inside the circle are the virus replicating inside the bacteria. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what happens as a result is the bacteria, right, with all the multiplying virus in it, start to throw off these peptides called toxin-like peptides. Now, the group has, at this point, identified about 300 to 400 different peptides. It's a signature, okay? They were able to show this because in their papers, they did have the same people that got the virus were their own control. So meaning anyone that never had COVID before, when they looked in their stool and in their serum and all that stuff, in their urine, they didn't make, these peptides weren't present. But then after getting the virus, these peptides were present.
Okay.
So it's unique to SARS-CoV-2.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, I'm 100%. Really trying here because I get yelled at a lot.
No. This is important and this is, people will understand.
So, okay. So now in most people, if you test them, and we're in the middle of researching all this, okay, they have these toxin-like peptides because the bacteriophages live in our gut for months, if not years. I mean, I'm really not trying to freak people. I'm just telling you, okay? So they're there in a lot of people, even people that don't feel like they have long COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what is the short and long-term damage. Like what is somebody's post-COVID condition and is it resulting from this? I don't know, but these toxin-like peptides exert their effects all over the body. And a lot of them are neurotoxins that cross the blood-brain barrier, right? And they are toxic to the gut and the gut lining and to maybe your kidneys and your lid and all different places, and your heart, you know? So that's problem one. Okay.
One second. I'm going to stop you there. How do we test for this peptide to know if we have it in our body?
So right now it's in R&D. I'm able to do it with a lot of my patients, but the idea is to hopefully commercialize it at some point very soon.
Okay. All right. Okay. Keep going. Sorry.
So, which I don't know how that would happen, but whatever. Hopefully maybe someone will hear this and want to help us. I don't know. So, okay. So that's first. Now it gets more complicated. You're like, oh God. When you have the virus, remember, like when you identify the virus, like even in the gut, you could have the spike protein just in the cells, right? Or you
right.
could have the virus replicating in the cells. And that's not just in the gut, but anywhere in your body, right? Now, once the spike protein of the virus is inside any cell, it becomes a senescent cell.
Yes.
So it becomes like a half dead zombie.
Right. 100%.
And the virus triggers all these different proteins and compounds that inhibit autophagy. So, and your audience might be like, what's autophagy? So autophagy is the way the cell saves itself.
So if the
cell is sort of kind of sick and dying and not well, like it can like kick in, you know, to superhero mode and like get itself like, you know, healthy and better again.
Yes.
But
yes.
If the spike protein or the virus is inside the cell, then it's unlikely that that will happen. Now, those senescent cells have to come out of you because while they're living in you, they're like throwing off all of these terrible pro-inflammatory cytokines and garbage and horribleness.
Yep. Yes.
But now, because of SAST, which is the secretory phenotype, the senescent associated secretory phenotype, right?
Mm-hmm.
which sort of sends out signals to like adjacent cells or cells that are around in the same area, right? Those cells can then sort of start falling into a senescent state too. But you can save those cells because the spike or the virus actually isn't in it. It's just through this sort of, you know, mechanism, this communicative mechanism, like the signaling sort of mechanism that's making them senescent. But those cells that don't have the spike in them or the virus, you could potentially save them with senomorphics, right? So the senolytics are going to get rid of these bad, you know, cells, but the senomorphics can help morph those cells back to healthy cells.
So is that like a medication treatment therapy? No,
we're going to get to it. We're going to get to why. Giving you like the concepts.
Yeah.
Does that concept make sense? Like that? It's a hard concept.
Well, it makes sense.
It's so hard.
It makes sense to me because I'm in class right now studying cellular biology and everything. Right. So I understand everything you're talking about. I totally get. I just got done learning about senescent cells and autophagy.
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect.
Well, I work with Timeline Nutrition, and so I'm very familiar with creating mitophagy and urolithin A. So this is all my wheelhouse. So I get it. But, you know, I want to make, I'm sure that people.
I'm trying to like dumb it down, but you can only dumb it down more if you.
Yeah, 100%.
Just jump in. So, okay. And then the last part I'm going to say about this is you have productive cells and depot cells.
Okay.
So what the hell is that? So productive cells are cells throughout our body that have the actual virus inside them that are still producing spike protein. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Wait. And then another type of productive cell is a cell that has the mRNA in it from the vaccine that's able to still produce spike protein. Does that make sense?
So that's not good.
No, that's not good. But then because of all the free-floating spike and all the spike that we produce from the vaccine or a virus when we're infected, the spike is a magnet for any cell in your body. Okay. And the spike can actually attach to over 24 different host cell receptors in our body. So everyone always hears ACE receptor. No. That's like one of 20, like six receptors. That's why it's such a beast. And that's why it impacts so many different organ systems because it can access almost every cell in our body. Okay. So if you have free floating spike without the mRNA or the virus, right? That spike is a magnet for any healthy cell it comes into. It doesn't live in the blood. I just want to make that like it has no purpose. It doesn't want to be there. It will just like you'll eventually just get rid of it. You'll pee or poop it out, you know? So as soon as it comes in contact with a healthy cell, it accesses that host cell receptor, gets in, and that's a depot cell. So it's not productive because it doesn't have machinery behind it like a virus or the mRNA to make more, but it's still a spike inside a cell that now made that cell senescent and now overrides autophagy and it needs to be taken out also. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So what a mess.
You gotta get all those cells out. And then the other cells, like I told you from the SAS, you know, that don't have spike or virus in it, you know, they can be saved. And it's every cell in your body. It's like every immune cell, your endothelial cell, epithelial cells, your astrocytes in your brain, your glial cells, like everything.
Right.
And there's thousands of papers from major academic institutions all over the globe that show exactly what I'm talking about. So it's not like made up, like electron microscopic pictures of this, right? Like that show that this is like legitimate and really is happening, you know?
Have you given any like lectures, written any books, done anything on this at all?
Yeah. Oh, so it's funny. And I'm a very like humble person. Like I don't have a big ego at all, but I'll tell you this. So I've been trying to really perfect my speaking because I have all this information in my brain and it's really hard to get out. Right. And I'm not a seasoned speaker. I haven't like Betsy and all these other beautiful mentors and friends of mine. They've been speaking for a long time and I love listening to them. I learned so much from them. And like Frank Lipman, like all these people, Amy Killen's another one, Kiran Krishnan, like, well, they're great. And so I get up there and I'm like, I have all this stuff. I don't know what to do with it. So I was at the IHS, gave my talk. And I was like, yeah, that wasn't great because although it got Although, like so many people, I was there an hour after, like talking to so many people that the reception was lovely. But I was like, God, I got to do better. So then I went to go speak at Calm, which is Tammy and me and, you know, Betsy and Cynthia, you know, Keller. Like we all spoke, you know, a lot of us spoke there. Abid Hussein, like whatever, great group of people. And Betsy was like so cute because she's like bragging, like because like I'm like her like really good friend, and so she's like, we've never seen this happen before. So what happened was I couldn't, so I shortened the talk and I got through a lot of the points, which we'll finish getting through. And the audience was like stunned, right? And I was like, oh my God, right? And I didn't realize like how like impactful, but like I definitely did a much better job than at IHS, like getting the points across, right?
Right.
And so I got through so much more of the talk to really, you know, have people wrap their heads around like what is going on, you know?
Yeah,
it was a great audience because many of, you know, it's a lot of doctors, obviously, you know, nutrition, you know, people like you too, like that are in your space as well, but people like get it, you know? So it was like good. And so the MC, Karen, who's like adorable, so awesome, she comes off to take me off and they booed her and told them to like let me finish and keep going. And I was so flattered and humbled. Like I really was. And like, and then like Betsy and like Cynthia, they're like, that's never happened at any conference we've ever been at, you know? So this must be really important, you know?
It's
so anyway, the point is I've been at only a few talking, but I'm getting better. So I promise the next time I'll be better.
Well, look, I have done public speaking for, what am I, 43? I was doing classes and everything at 14 years old. Some people get amped for it. Like I look forward to it and I get amped for it. I have no butterflies anymore, no sweats, no fast heart, nothing at all. Yeah, it's like, it's awesome. Excitement, but you have to, that doesn't come naturally. You have to overcome and get used to it, and you will. More comfort, and then it starts flowing. I mean, you go back and watch some of the videos I made like 15 years ago, and you're like, dude, what the, you know, I'm looking at myself like, what?
It was a big leap from that one to this one. Like I definitely was much better and like got my point across and a lot more clear, you know, with the message.
But, yeah.
You know, and I was definitely not nearly as nervous too, which was good, you know? So I feel like what you're saying, the more I do, the better.
Yes. Here's what you have to have in your corner. Yeah. It's so important. Well, two things. One, you have to have thick ass skin where you can need to be open to all criticism and take it as help and not like, oh, you hurt my feelings.
Right.
And you have to be able to take that and listen to it and then use it as your fuel to go, man, because like I always tell my wife, if I'm being annoying, if I'm talking too much, if I look like shit, tell me so I can fix it. Right. So you have to be open to constructive criticism.
I'm totally open to it.
Once you're open to that, then you can go back and rewatch what you did and go, okay, maybe this person's just hating, or maybe this person's really telling me the truth.
Yeah.
And you can judge by audience reaction and how you view it. Right.
Yeah.
But you can't live in fantasy land and think that, oh my gosh, I do everything great. I don't care if you've been doing it.
Not at all.
Yeah. You do it 100 years, you're still probably doing something wrong.
And totally.
You know,
I'm always wanting to get better, always learning more every day, you know, all those things.
Yes. There's no room for sensitivity when you're trying to be successful. There's just not, you know, and I'm big on that. You have to be able to be tough to be successful. So just wanted to throw, I'm sorry, I get really riled up with that because I'm like really trained for.
So I didn't mean to digress, but that's what happened. And so I've spoken a few times. So that's
I think you're wonderful. I think that you get passionate about what you're saying. So you just keep going and people want to hear it. They do. So.
Right. So those are those first two points, which are so important.
Yes.
So now you're like, crap, how do we get this out? And then I just want to talk about a few other really important points. Okay.
Yes.
So then everyone's like, okay, the spike protein, it's in there. It's doing X, Y, and Z. What is it doing? Let's just focus in on like three organ systems. And because you can get into the autoimmune part, get into the immune deficiency part, like whatever. But let's talk about the brain, the heart, and the vascular system.
Yes, please.
It's so important. So your brain, it's so sensitive to this. And this is why I believe we're seeing the tsunami of neurodegenerative disease like we've never seen before. Right. Even from 2020 to 2022, there has been an increase of Parkinson's disease by 50%. I just said 50%. I didn't say 1%. I didn't say 5%. I didn't even say 10%. I just said 50%. Right.
Right.
This is because when the spike, so it's a few, there's a few reasons why, and I'm going to, let's just get into the few simple, a few reasons that people can take away.
Please.
Okay. Where should I start first? Okay. So one concept is that we know that the spike protein from post-mortem studies, you know, from pathologists looking at this, in people that had COVID or even the vaccine, that the spike protein is found even months and months later after they were exposed to either in the skull. In the skull meninges, like meaning the skull meninges connection, the meninges itself, and in the skull bone marrow. Okay? This has been proven. Now, we also know that the spike protein has a very high affinity for the astrocytes in our brain and the pericytes. So the astrocytes and the astroglia cells are super duper important, right? And we know that these astrocytes are what line and make up the blood-brain barrier, okay? And then the pericytes are like sort of behind it on the back. And if you like, we're thinking like, oh, there's a front row and a back, like behind. And those also are infected. The spike protein transfects those cells too and gets
it. So that's like another lining then.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so now, okay, so now we have spike inside these cells, and that's really bad. And then on the other side of our brain is our glymphatic system, right? Which is how we get rid of all the toxins and garbage, like sort of like how our lymphatic system works throughout our body. That's our glymphatic system in our brain. And especially at night when we're sleeping, that's when the glymphatic system is working the most to move all the garbage out of our brain, right? So we can repair, regenerate, detoxify. So the glymphatic system is lined also by the astrocytes and this and these channels called the aquaporin 4, okay? And those are heavily infested by the spike protein as well. So now what happens is your brain, we call it like a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
Because in like my group in Europe, Joachim Gerlach, who's been an amazing mentor, he coined it because it's true. Because what happens is now the blood-brain barrier is like wide open, right? It's not intact anymore.
Right.
All this garbage is flying across it because you know that blood-brain barrier is so, so selective about what comes into your brain. Right. And on the other side, you have a destroyed or a very compromised glymphatic system that isn't able to get rid of all this garbage now flying across your brain. So that's why people feel the way they feel. They feel like they're underwater, like their head's going to explode. Right. Don't you talk to all these long COVID patients, that's what they feel like, you know, and that's what drives the chronic fatigue and the post-exertional malaise and that head pressure feeling and the neck pressure and all. Like, I know so many people are probably like, oh my God, that's how I feel, that are listening to this or that will be listening to this, because that's why. That's one of the reasons, okay? And then you get microglia activation, and those microglia cells are terrible. That, you know, when you have microglia activation, that's what, you know, when you look at an Alzheimer's brain, right? They have microgliosis, their microglia are activated. That's what causes damage and all that stuff. That's what a SARS-CoV-2 brain looks like too. If you look at studies and put them side by side. Okay, so that's one point. The second point is that when the spike protein, and this, okay, so I got to give credit. So there's two researchers, Per Hammarström and Sophie Nystrom. I think they're Swedish. They published what we coined the Hammarström fibers, okay?
Okay.
So they looked at the spike protein and they looked at this enzyme called neutrophil elastase. So when you have SARS-CoV-2, when you have the virus, it activates the neutrophils, which is part of your white blood cells,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Right, which fight off infection, they get activated. And then when the neutrophils get activated, they release this enzyme called neutrophil elastase.
Right. Okay? Right.
When neutrophil elastase, so it's an enzyme, right? So you know enzymes cut things up. So when neutrophil elastase comes into contact with the spike protein and it cuts the protein at certain parts, you know, of that sequence.
Yeah.
They identified 7 different sequences or epitopes that get exposed when the spike protein comes in contact with the neutrophil elastase.
Okay.
Those 7 proteins are neurotoxic fibrils. They form neurotoxic fibrils on contact with the spike protein. So, and it's tau proteins, right? We know what tau is, Alzheimer's, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Alpha-synuclein, which is Parkinson's. Is it CD147? Or I forget, I think that's, or C, what's the other one? The one for ALS. There's beta amyloid, right? Beta amyloid, which we know is Alzheimer's too.
Right, right.
And they even identified one of, you know, and I can share that too with you, so you can see the slide, or you want to share the study with the audience. That's prionergic, meaning it could cause prion disease.
Right.
And so if people want to understand what that is, it's mad cow's disease.
Man, there's a lot here.
Right, right. And so that is why, because of this like sort of soup of different, like, or in the soup, I think of it, like these different fibers that can form, you're almost seeing these people present, or we're seeing in the clinic, and when I talk to my beautiful colleagues out there that are really noticing this too, you're seeing like not even like straightforward ALS or straightforward Parkinson's or straightforward, it's like almost like a mishmash, because you have a mishmash of these fibers being activated post exposure. And so everyone's over it. I get it. I don't want you not to be over it. But, you know, even in the last year and a half alone, there's been 3 or 4 papers published by Nature's Communication, just showing like a young person with mild, from just one exposure from a mild case or an asymptomatic case of COVID, has brain changes, has gray matter changes, white matter changes, has decreased cerebral blood flow to their brain just after one exposure, right? So this is why now people are being exposed over and over again. And we already live in a toxic soup, right? Yeah. So we already live in a toxic, and now you have this biotoxin on top of everything else that I think so many people were living right here, and it just like pushed them over. You know, it was like the last drop in the bucket.
So the more exposed you've been to it, or more that you've had it, then the likely the more.
Maybe possibly.
Yeah.
But you have all the people from the first time that are still suffering. I mean, I believe the more spike burden you have, could set you up probably not for the best success. And that's why it's so important, you know, for prophylactics, I believe, you know, for prevention. And for treatment, to like really treat the right way and try to move the virus, you know, like squash the virus right away so it doesn't multiply, and get rid of these spike proteins right away so they can't take hold and get, you know, become pervasive in different cells throughout your body.
Why would somebody like me have had it so many damn times, like keep getting it? I don't understand.
So we sort of covered the neuro stuff. So I guess I'll move to immune deficiency. So the spike protein, so I was explaining how it gets inside the cells. So it really has a very high affinity for your CD4 cells, your CD8 cells, so your T lymphocytes, your B cells, all of your immune cells, right? And so when it gets inside these cells, and you don't necessarily have to see it on your blood work that you have a quantitative deficiency, but you have a qualitative deficiency now.
Mm.
So now you have spike inside these cells, and that's why people can't fight off infection as well, right? So think about it. Why are middle-aged adults getting RSV? Like, prior to the pandemic, nobody in their 40s or 50s ever had RSV.
I was going
to
say.
The whole freaking town has it, right?
Yeah.
And what is this triple-demic of like people getting the flu, RSV, and COVID all at one time? Like, what is up with your immune system, right? And what is up with all these people, like people that we're friends with that just like are getting sick multiple times in the winter? Like they had the flu, then they had COVID, then they had 3 colds, then they had bronchitis, right? Why? And also why it takes so much longer for the average person to get over that virus or kick it when they used to not be able to.
Yeah.
Because our immune cells have been impacted and affected in many people. And so we have to rebuild resilience and really rebuild and get rid of those bad cells and bring the new cells back, you know, without spike in it, so that they can function properly.
What's the best way to build that immune resilience back after exposure?
We're going to get there.
Okay. All right.
So that's like the end. So that covers the immune. We had to talk about it, but that.
Yeah.
And not to mention, Dylan, like that also encompasses cancer. Like, why are we seeing so many young? So everyone will say, oh, the cancer rate was going up and up. Like, you know, it has nothing to do with COVID, but no, that's BS. COVID accelerated it. Like, if you look at like how it jumped since 2020, 2021, like compared to what the trajectory it was on. And why are so many people, I have friends, friends of friends, family that were in complete remission from their cancers, right? And now they have turbo stage 4 of that cancer. They were in remission for 10, 15, 20 years, right? But now, like, I don't know, like, how many coincidences can you have? I've heard of 25 people in the last 6 months with pancreatic cancer. The spike protein has a very high affinity, and there's papers written on this too, of why it can cause pancreatic cancer. The spike protein takes out P53, which is your tumor suppressor gene, right? That's your main tumor suppressor gene. So that's why, I mean, I'm just giving you a little, there's so many other reasons, like, and what it does to your interferon, you know, one also, like, it, all the things that would fight or suppress cancers or suppress infections and all that stuff are impacted by the spike protein.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. It does. 100%.
So then let's quickly just talk about cardio and vascular, because that's why is myocarditis, pericarditis, like, why are all these young people dropping dead of heart attacks or just getting heart attacks, right?
Yes, please.
At young ages, like, everyone comes out to me all the time, like, oh my God, why, right? And not to mention, like, the amount of athletes, especially in Europe, you know, in football, soccer, you know, literally, like, keeling, like, dropping on the field,
yeah,
you know, and all these young people, it's like we've normalized young kids to have cardiac arrest, like on the soccer field and the basketball. I mean, I don't know. I know I'm not the only one seeing this. It's no. And if you try to think before pre-pandemic, like, that was like one in a million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't like story after story.
Right.
You know? And so it's because the spike protein embeds itself in the endothelium, right? And the endothelial cells are what makes up your vasculature, right? And then especially, you know, if you think about your cardiovascular system, I mean, vascular affects everything. Like, that's why there's a lot of issues with kidney disease now. And, you know, it's everywhere. The cardiomyocytes are very sensitive to the spike protein. Those are your cells in your heart, right? And so that's why we've seen such an uptick in slew of myocarditis, pericarditis, you know, more in men, but even women. I mean, I had a female patient the other day that's coming to me for long COVID, and it all started after she had the, I can't remember if it was the vaccine or the infection, and she had pericarditis. And then after that, it all went to crap for her. And she's never been the same since. She was hysterical crying in my office. She's 25 years old. She doesn't have a life. But anyway, that's why. It's because you have this low-grade endotheliitis or inflammation of the blood vessel wall that's activating platelets, you know, chemokines. Things are coming, clots are forming, you know, things that shouldn't be happening normally. And it's perpetuating, you know, an event, you know, and strokes because of the clotting as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And vascular. So lastly, the vasculature. So what's happening? So I feel like people have heard me talk about these microclots. Do you see these?
Yeah.
Okay. So when the clotting cascade gets activated by this, you know, by that, what I was explaining, that endotheliitis, that inflammation of the blood vessel wall, right? You have all these, and the platelets get activated, you know, the clotting cascade gets activated, and then these clots get formed, and they're sort of like a beta amyloid. That's why they're green. This is like amyloid.
Okay.
So, and this is under a fluorescent microscope. So when those clots start to form, the normal mechanisms that our body uses to break down clots, these clots are resistant to that. The process is called fibrinolysis. Our body, it's resistant to typical mechanisms of fibrinolysis. It can't break these down.
Okay.
So prior to the pandemic, Raisa Pretorius, I don't want to mess up her name. She's in, you know, major academic institution in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
She protocolized microclots. And microclots in normal people are, I mean, in a healthy person are normal to a very certain extent. You could get this protein misfolding where you have these beta amyloid, this beta, but very minimal, right? So on a grading scale of 1 through 4, like a healthy person might be a 1 or 2.
Sure. Okay? Sure.
And then she looked at patients that were very, very ill with like end-stage diabetes, like refractory heart failure, you know, very sick ill patients, and they make these. And then they found that patients that didn't get over COVID were making these also. Okay. And so this should look black. You see, like, it really should look black like that. And you see all this lighting up?
Yeah.
Right. So that you need a fluorescent microscope, which is a very expensive piece of equipment. And only three people in the U.S. are trained by by BSL. This patient has many, like, everywhere. And so, and she's a grade 3.5 out of 4. So that's not normal. So the other goal is, like, we need to, like, everyone's like, oh, give triple anticoagulation. That can help break them up. Maybe to a certain degree. I'm not saying it can't. Again, they're resistant. They're not regular clots. They're beta amyloid clots. You know, they're not regular. It's like when a person, like, presents with a clot, you know, like a pulmonary embolism or DVT, you know, prior to the pandemic, those clots are not made of that. This is a different, you know, these clots are different. So the normal mechanisms of how we would treat clots is sort of like out the door, although triple anticoagulation band-aids it, and it will help, you know, with breaking up the clots, but it's not getting the root cause because you're still going to make them because you didn't get rid of the spike protein.
Right.
All right, so now we can talk about treatment. I could talk to you for 4 hours about this, but I just wanted to get a few of those points across, like, so that you can sort of understand how it's such a monster, right? The disease process itself and how the spike protein and the virus behave, you know? And although the virus is not pathogenic, meaning you're likely not going to wind up in the hospital, God willing, you won't. But with each mutation, it becomes more and more transmissible and more contagious. And the studies have shown that the newer Omicron variants cause more damage to the heart, cause more damage to the brain. And it's happening at a cellular level. So it's almost like a silent killer because we don't know it's really happening.
Right.
When it's happening. So wow. That's what's going on.
Unbelievable.
Pretty much.
Okay. Well, that's a lot.
Are you okay?
Well, it's just so much going on that no one would ever have any clue about. I'm a little disturbed by it's everything, disturbing. But I'm glad to know, you know, like,
yeah,
it's just, it's very troubling to really, well, here's the two parts that are troubling to me. One is the amount of shit that's going on, but two, it's the lack of amount of education that we actually have on this. That's actually discussed in this detail. I wouldn't have known a fraction of this.
Yeah. And not having the assays, if people could test, right? Because that's the other thing too. Like, it's like, why did this woman after the vaccine or after the virus all of a sudden develop dementia out of nowhere? Or why did this person develop or get a heart attack? Or why did this person develop a crazy autoimmune disease? Or what? Like, if you could test and, like, figure out that person's unique blueprint, right? Like, and figure out, like, oh, okay, spike protein in this person is living in these cells, right? It's throwing off these types of toxin like peptides and have this unique gut immune imprint, that blueprint rather, that you can discover, then you can back into it with more personalized treatment for those people.
Okay, well then let's talk about, we said we'd talk about how to build back your immunity and then how to treat.
Yeah. So, okay, nothing's foolproof, right? And
of course.
And so I find that people with mild disease or people that feel good, take care of themselves, like someone like you, me, right? Like, I keep myself on a low level protocol all the time. And then what I do is when I get exposed, then I, like, ramp it up, right? Or
right.
If I know, you know, whatever. Or even if I'm not sure, because, right, look what you just said, by the way, you're like, two of my tests were positive and three, if there wasn't, just assume you have it and take
it. Yeah, absolutely.
Here's the thing. People are getting infected with it like 2-3 times a year, right? And to be quite honest with you, all of these compounds, these natural polyphenols, have great activity against a lot of viruses, RNA viruses, all these. So, like, just take it. It's not going to hurt you.
No.
And the vast majority of people that get on these, you know, these different compounds and things, they feel better so much faster no matter what they're suffering from.
Right. Yeah. 100%. Well, what I ran from you worked like a charm. So let's just get into. Let's talk about
prophylactics first, right?
Okay.
Let's talk about it. Like, it's so silly, like, not to.
Okay. Wait. What is prophylactics? Not everybody knows. Okay.
I'm sorry. Prevention.
Right.
I told you to yell at me. I know.
Well, not everybody knows. So.
No, I want you to yell at me. That's what I told you. So let's talk about prevention, right? So how could we prevent ourselves from getting sick or, you know, So, okay. First of all, you want to have adequate vitamin D levels, right? You have a vitamin D receptor for everything. Every cell in your body has vitamin D receptors. And we know that it helps. It's an antimicrobial, all that stuff. I'm a big believer, too, if you're a middle-aged adult, you know, you start to lose your melatonin starting at the age of like 18, 19 years old, right? Melatonin's a hormone. And it's, yes, it helps regulate our circadian rhythms, our circadian clock, but it also is a very, very potent antioxidant, antimicrobial, anti-inflammatory. And it, and the studies that we looked at really show that it helps restore health and balance to that blood-brain barrier. It helps repair the astrocytes and the glymphatic system. So I'm a big proponent of melatonin. You know, I have no issue sleeping, but I take 3 milligrams at night. Yeah, why not?
Well, everybody thinks it's only for sleeping. So, and I'm glad you just brought that up because that's just not the case at all. So,
yeah, it's like, it's so powerful. It's funny, Dylan. At the beginning of the pandemic, I was obsessed with COVID and I actually thought I had it. And then they didn't let me. So I got sick right at the beginning because I took a trip to another functional medicine practice that I was, whatever, I was talking to them and, you know, they were gracious enough to let me come and I debated getting on the plane and I was like wrapped like 5,000 times around with my scarf and I knew it was coming. It was the very beginning of March, but I had been following it from like January in China because my husband at the time, he was also doing a lot of business in China. So he was getting pictures and videos and all the craziness that was going on there. So I was like, oh my God, like there's no way it's not coming here, you know?
Right.
Anyway, so I had this feeling that right around that my trip, it was like any day, which it was, because like the next week it came. So I wouldn't even use the bathroom, nothing. I was like, just like this. But anyway, I got sick. There was this guy coughing like insanity, like 3 rows in front of me. And I'm like, I'm totally going to get it. So 4 days later, I get sick. And at that point, the incubation period was like 4 to 7 days. And I got this horrible upper, I didn't get a cough. I didn't DSAT, nothing like that. But I had I never really get sick. And I was like such a terrible upper respiratory thing, but like awful, you know? And they wouldn't let me come back to work. Cause at that point when I was still sick, they were like, yep, you're not coming back to work. We don't know if you have COVID or not.
Right.
So I was home obsessed with COVID, like attending like any world-renowned virologist from Italy, Germany, wherever it was, like on the Zoom, you know, on the webinar, like trying to understand how this freaking virus works, like, you know, learning about the receptor binding domain, the furin cleavage, like anything, you know, and like all these words were like, you know, I'm not an immunologist or a virologist, but I became one really fast. So anyway, so I learn all this stuff and then I write this primer, but no one knows who I am. So it's like, I put it on my terrain site and I'm like, oh, maybe my friends and family read it. And it's every like natural compound, like, and it talks about melatonin, like every single thing that works, you know, cause these compounds like really work synergistically and they work on a multitude of different pathways, right?
Yeah.
And how they, you know, block the receptor binding domain so that the virus can't, you know, get inside the cell and how it blocks the furin cleavage so that you can't split into S1 and S2 and the virus, you know, like all those things. Right. And I wrote about it. It's still on my site. But anyway, melatonin is a big part of it. And so there's this amazing graph on melatonin where it looks like this. It's like slooping like this and slooping like this. And it shows you that how when, as you lose melatonin, right, for each decade, you lose so much melatonin, how you have such a much more increased risk of dying from COVID or getting COVID or really any virus or deadly virus for that matter, right? And it's because that's why the kids did so well, you know, and were barely sick or asymptomatic because they have such high melatonin.
High melatonin, got
it. There's like a strong correlation, right?
Okay.
Like, yeah, you want melatonin. That's
okay.
So I don't even know why.
We got vitamin D and we got melatonin.
Right. So I give a combination zinc CD because for several reasons, all three of them are really important for your gut microbiome. And we know that the gut microbiome, like, well, I guess it's not fully because I didn't go into a whole thing about it, but that's like ground zero, right? Like the phages, the bacteriophages are there. They're throwing off all these toxin like peptides. You got really crazy leaky gut. It's a disaster in there, you know? So you have to kill the bacteriophages also. Oh, wait, no, we're talking about prevention. Don't go there yet. Okay, So go back to immune resilience. So prevention. So zinc CD is great because that's going to help not only with keeping your intestinal mucosal barrier in check, but also it helps grow bifido. The C especially helps with bifidobacterial growth. Okay.
So zinc CD, is that zinc, vitamin C, and vitamin D? Is that correct?
Yeah, like it's, there's one that I found that has all three of them in it. So okay. Great. So I love that. And then some people would be like, oh my God, there's no K2 in it. So then I'm like, because they need D with the K. So I'm like, get a little K2, like Life Extension has a K2. It's fine. Okay. That's for prevention. Definitely. I think you should just always be on some zinc CD. I just do.
Yeah. 100%.
And as long as you're not on too much zinc, because people always worry about like copper depletion, like you should be okay. Like I don't like not more than 30 milligrams.
Okay.
So, and then I take the Rizo prophylactically also because it has antimicrobial properties as well, because what the spore formers do, you know, and they have sort of like quorum sensing capabilities, these specific types of bacteria. So they know sort of where to like help fight infection and things like that. And then I also, the Vidicinals 9. So the Vidicinals 9 was patented and formulated by the guys I've done research with and worked with and have learned so much from back in January of 2020. They, you know, Joachim Gerlach, he studied all of the different pathways and figured out there was these 250 to 300 different pathways being impacted by SARS-CoV-2, right? And so what, and then he looked at all the pathways and every single thing that's impacted by the virus, and then backed in with the different types of natural compounds or polyphenol compounds that can work synergistically on a multitude of all these pathways, right? At the same time. So the Vidicinals 9 has, you know, and he formulated in such a way that the bioavailability is much better the way it's formulated. So it's absorbed a lot better than like if you took like a regular capsule of that same thing. And so you don't even need as high of a dose and things like that. So it has, you know, quercetin, rutin, glycyrrhizin, hesperidin, bakelin, curcumin. Did I say quercetin, rutin? I can't remember everything. Oh, piperine. Yeah. And I'm forgetting one other one. Anyway, the point is that I love this product. I love it to help build immune resilience. I love it for the gut. I love it for general inflammation. You know, people that have gone on it, even that have joint pain and joint inflammation, say it helps them. It helps reduce the inflammation and the pain because of what those polyphenol compounds do.
Okay, you know? Got it.
And I would say, I just want to preface it like this. The Europeans and the Asians do much better with this product because they're used to having this in their diet and eating a certain way. Some of Americans are very sensitive when they start this product. So I would tell you when you start to go low, go slow. You know,
okay.
People that eat a very clean diet, that have really a really good, strong gut microbiome, things like that, they tolerate it much better. But very sick people, more sensitive people, people that are used to eating more of the standard American diet, it takes them a while. It takes them a little bit just to get used to it, you know?
Okay.
So anyway, I take it a few days a week with the Rizo as my preventative. Right. Okay. And then if I feel like something's coming on or I'm getting sick, I then start taking it like the Vidicinals like twice a day, every day, and the Rizo once a day, every day. Anyway, so zinc CD, the Rizo, the Vidicinals. And then, you know, I take other things that you would take for your immune system. You know, like some people like black seed oil, right?
Black seed oil.
The black. So, you know, I also like omegas. I use a plant-based omega.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's really good for so many different things, cardiovascular inflammation, your gut, all the things too. What else do I take? What do you take?
Daily?
Yeah.
What don't I take daily? I have a pretty extensive list of things I tried to cut down because I was taking too much, but curcumin's a big one that I take every day, or turmeric.
Right, which is great. And that's in the Vidicinal.
Yeah, I take natokinase, but that's for more for my heart, you know, with everything that I do. I do a dandelion root daily because I want the natural
I love that. Yeah.
Just getting rid of excess water in the natural way, natural diuretic wise. So I like to get rid of that. Dr. Gundry had me start taking something because I had told him about my LP little A citrus bergamot. I started bergamot, to take.
Yeah. Yeah. LPA, you know what works great for lipo A is the 1-MNA. Betsy talks about that a lot too.
Yes. You know,
it's very hard to get. My lipo A is elevated also. And interestingly, post COVID, and I there's studies written on this. I did a major literature search. The lipo A goes up, not just because you have the genetic. It's up because I noticed that way more than 20% of the population, or at least what I'm seeing, and even my regular like longevity patients, like their lipo A is up, and the lipo A goes up because of what's happening with this endotheliitis and what I was talking about. And it will, and there's papers now even a year out that show it's still, it's elevated. It still will remain elevated. So the lipo A is a problem here too.
I've gotten mine from 330 down to 96 the last time I checked it. So
nice. With the bergamot?
No. But that is with, take Repatha and Vascepa, and then.
You're taking Repatha.
Yes, but I've also done it with some natural thing. I have a natural protocol that I've utilized. I did take niacin for a while. I stopped because I think that was elevating my liver too much.
Right. And the niacin, I've never seen it work really great for.
No, I do. I do.
Estrogen is
pomegranate. Pomegranate juice is one of the things that I do. That's one of my secret sauces.
Love pomegranate juice.
Yes.
I drink it here too in my house. Yeah.
Well, when I get that clearly done, that's going to tell me a lot. When
I know, when I can't wait for you to get the clearly.
Yes, me
the
too.
The Repatha has, you know, it does. It has been, maybe it did, maybe the combination with the other things you're doing, but the Repatha itself has been shown to reduce the lipo A by 30%.
Yeah, Repatha and Vascepa both are 25 to 30%. And I'm just kind of waiting for the Eli Lilly's got the one in trial that supposedly's doing like a 90 to 95%.
Oh my god, I'm gonna have to go on that.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, I didn't mean to digress. So yeah, and then another thing too is your B vitamins, like a good B complex, because so many people carry or either heterozygous or homozygous for the MTHFR mutation. They either have one gene or both gene. And that also, I feel like, sets people up for the problems with, you know, COVID and post-COVID conditions, because they can't detoxify and move out the cytokine also, or the virus. So I think, you know, that is another really important piece of the puzzle as well.
So this is our immunity builder prevention type of deal.
And then, I have a few other little pearls. So using povidone iodine, you know, like maybe before you travel or before, you know, another repurposed drug, pentasin. Some of the compounding pharmacists make it in a nasal spray. I think that's a great prophylactic, because iodine you have to be careful with, especially because if you use too much of the povidone iodine, it will get absorbed. I worry about it in my thyroid patients, especially because it can impact your thyroid. If you're just doing it like every once in a while, it should be fine. You don't want to use it for like more than like 2 weeks in a row or anything like that. But when you're using it so much, even sporadically, I noticed there were some issues with the thyroid function tests on some of my patients when they were using a lot of the, you know, so I like pentasin is a very, it's a polysaccharide. It's a very, very strong binder to spike protein. Very. And it also acts as a weak anticoagulant. So when I put people on my, that see me, I use pentasin at a little bit of a higher dose for those two reasons, for the systemic effects on what it does on the spike protein, but as a prophylactic for a nasal spray, awesome, because then it will bind, it won't let the spike, you know, access the epithelial, the mucosa.
Okay.
Because that's, remember, it's here, it's your oropharynx, how the virus really, or any virus, gains access to you and starts replicating.
Right.
So and lastly, I'll say is my group, the guys I work with that have developed a lot of these, you know, products, they worked on a nasal spray. And I think they're trying to get it, you know, manufactured in the US. And as soon as that's done, oh my God, I would give that to everybody. It's a Vidicinals 9 nasal spray. It's wonderful.
Okay. So that's kind of our,
and those are good prophylactic. Oh, and one more thing, ivermectin. I'm going to just talk about ivermectin.
Well, that's where I was going next, was to the ivermectin. So yeah, let's go there.
There's been, you know, it's like so politicized. It's so sad. But
let's just talk facts and not bullshit. How about that?
So many papers.
Yeah.
No, yeah. So there have been so many papers. And then the excuse that you hear in mainstream media or whatever is that, oh, it wasn't powered enough. This was flawed. Oh, this, for all the flaws or whatever you want to have to say about the hundreds of studies that have been published all over the globe showing the efficacy of ivermectin, right? And I'm not saying that it should be used alone and it's a panacea, okay? I'm not.
Right.
When you use it, it should be used in combination for treatment, okay? But it really helps, right? For all of those studies, the studies that were done in England and in the United States that showed it wasn't efficacious, I want to make this clear, those studies were very flawed. Because when they studied the ivermectin in the patients, okay, there were so many different things, everything from the way they dosed it. It was so underdosed. It's a weight-based dosing. It was underdosed in the vast majority of all of the patients receiving it, okay? It was given the wrong way. You have to eat it with food, especially like fat. It is much more bioavailable. It was given on an empty stomach, okay? They introduced it too late in many people. Like, there were so many flaws in these major studies that, fine, if you want to say there were flaws in these studies, you need to also, you know, man up and say there were flaws in these studies. You know, that's not cool, right? But you have so many studies showing good outcomes. Like, why would you not use it? It's safe. It is so safe. It is such a safe medicine. It won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2000. Is it 15 or 17?
Yeah.
And it's not just an antiparasitic. By the way, as a gastroenterologist for 15 plus years, I used ivermectin a lot to treat patients that had parasites. And I never, ever heard of it being called a horse dewormer.
No.
So the fact that you were able to like flip it on the mass populace and say it's a horse dewormer. Like I never even as a doctor heard it was used that way. I didn't even know they used it in horses.
Well,
and you know,
Dr. Like, Robin, it is a disruptor to the financial side of, you know, big pharma, whatever the hell you want to call it. I don't even like to say that because it sounds so just blah.
Yeah.
It's the drug companies. It's a disruptor to the drug companies, which in turn, all of the people they pay then go put out this bullshit to try to convince people. And so everybody follows suit like little sheep without doing their research. And then what they tried to do, which they can't do anymore, is block us from talking about it. Now they can't do that anymore. Right. Now everybody knows the secret's out.
So, okay. So the point is that as a treatment in conjunction with other things, it could be wonderful. That's first of all.
Sure. But, yeah. Okay.
But as a prophylactic, I mean, I found the studies to be very compelling. And then there was the one study done in Brazil. Pierre Corey is an author on it. What's his name? You know, there's a bunch of guys that were at the FLCC that are on there too. And they looked at Brazilian people like in the population that were given, and they had two groups. They had a group that was given it as a preventative, right? And they were dosed weight-based at 0.2 milligrams per kilogram, and they took it twice a week, every other week, okay? And then they had the control group that didn't take it at all right? And even in the patients that were given it, a lot of those patients, and they talk about this in the study, weren't even compliant, right?
But
they were taking it to some degree, whether it was one a month or two, whatever, okay? And they found such a marked statistical significance in everything from mortality to having to be in the ICU to hospitalization or length of hospital stay, actually getting the virus or not, or if you got it, how many days you were sick. Every one of those parameters performed so much better in the group that got it.
Right.
And remember where this comes from. The reason why they started using it was because some doctors globally were really smart and were like, wow, nobody in Africa is getting COVID.
Right.
Why is that? Because, or a lot of people weren't, right? And then they figured out that these men, mostly men, that were really not getting, you know, and they were, you know, most men did way worse than women too, right? In the rest of the world, they weren't getting it because they were getting it for prevention of what's called river blindness. It's this, you know, in the rivers, they pick up, I think from the fish or in the river itself, a parasite that causes blindness. Mm-hmm. And so they're dosed a few times a year, not like nearly as much as I'm just saying, but a few times a year with this And that was enough to prevent like major outbreaks and disease.
Yeah.
So that's how it all came about.
Wow.
You know, guys like Pierre Corey and all these people that, God, they were freedom fighters, right? And
Yeah. Leaders
and they got such crap. But like, it's so sad because I will tell you, all of the patients that I have had on it, and then the patients that I did treat with some of the other things, they all did great, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, what I would like to do, since we're running out of time.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, but what I want to do is, if you want to, and I'd love to do this, we'll do a part two where we discuss long COVID, the vaccine, and more on ivermectin in greater detail, so we can get into that and do a whole episode on that, because I think that will be a good follow-up to this, where we kind of covered all of COVID, what it was, how to treat it, all of that, and then we can follow up with the second part and do all of that, because that'll be a great...
Remember, a big part of the segment in the beginning was gut stuff, so we didn't...
Yes.
But the last part I'll say is the treatment, right? Just really fast. So really quick, I can do this in 5 minutes. So the idea is that you have to do this safely, and you have to have all the things on board sort of simultaneously when you go. So we just talked about prophylactic. So this is more, we won't get into acute treatment. Acute treatment's different. We'll talk about that next time. But let's talk about if you go on to have long COVID or something, right? Or how could you maybe start to feel a little bit better or move the needle if you're not really that sick, right? So you want to mobilize spike protein. Okay, two things. You want to get the bacteria out of your gut, right? So the only studies to date, and I'm going to cringe when I say this, is using antibiotics to kill the bacteriophages, because nothing else is going to kill the bacteria. There's probably some natural products and antimicrobials, but that wasn't studied. So Bronya et al., they studied it, and they showed that the amoxicillin, 875 twice a day for a week. If you're penallergic, Zithromax, 500 for the first day, 250 for the next 6 days, plus or minus, you can add Xifaxan in or Rifaximin for those 7 days. I don't tend to do it because if I feel like when I'm using the medicinals, I use the medicinals in combination with the antibiotic and it works really good, you know, like acting more like Augmentin than amoxicillin, if that makes sense. So that's how you can kill the phages.
Okay.
And then now you want to deal with spike protein. So, okay, you need to break open these senescent cells, right, with senolytics. You have to have binders on board that are then going to quickly bind the spike protein, because remember what I told you, spike protein's a magnet for any cell. So any healthy cell in the area, that spike is going to then try to go find, attach to, and get into, right? So you have the binders on board, but you also have in the medicinals 9, those compounds, many of them are receptor binding domain blockers. So they'll block healthy cells in the area. They'll block the receptor so that spike can't get in, right? And then you also have a lot of, you don't want S1 to split from S2, the furin cleavage, right? There's furin inhibitors built in also to the medicinals 9. So you basically have the medicinals 9 as your backbone. Then you have the binders, the extra binder, which is the sequestrol, and you have the senolytic. 8 of the 9 polyphenol compounds in the medicinal design are also natural binders, and 4 of the 8 are natural senolytics. But we put an extra product, which are binders on board. Okay, like I think it might have zeolite, fucoidon, silica, and then the senolytic has very high dose resveratrol in it and fisetin. Okay. So those are all on the MediCoreRx.com. So it's those plus the rhizo plus a melatonin, liposomal melatonin, because of all. So that's a core basic product that package that people can do to start maybe, you know, moving the needle and feeling better.
Okay. Got it. Perfect.
And that's what you're doing. You're basically mobilizing spike, binding spike, blocking any healthy cells in the area of receptors, right? So that the spike then doesn't, if it's not attached to a binder and it's free floating, it doesn't. And then you're moving it out of your body. You're peeing it out.
Got it. Okay. Awesome.
That's it.
I got a ton of notes here.
I feel like we digress so much, but we can talk more about it in detail, but that's the crux of it. But you know, the sicker patients, EBOO, you know, we're coming out with a study and we could talk more about that when I see you again, that we proved that the EBOO filters out, the specific EBOO that we use, filters out the spike protein and the toxin-like peptides. And when you do it the right way and dose them with the senolytics and the binders prior to the EBOO, you can mobilize a lot of the spike out of the cells and then filter it out. So anyway, there's so many things to talk about. I'm so sorry that we really digressed a lot. But
no, that's good. Really, it's all good. Yes. Excellent. I've got stacks of notes here to go through. I'm going to talk to you about later for sure. Well, I really appreciate the insight because it's really, really priceless insight. And this is things you just don't hear. So it is really, really appreciated your time and your effort, especially in all of this. So thank you.
Thanks, Dylan, for having me. I really loved being with you. It was super fun. Really well.
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk about part two and setting that up, and we'll work on some other things together, I'm sure. So
I'm sure. Yeah.
Tell everybody, I'll cite this in the notes, but what are the best places to follow your work or find you or contact you? Okay.
So my Instagram is at Dr. like period or dot Robin Rose, R-O-B-I-N-R-O-S-E. My Facebook is the same without the dot, at Dr. Robin Rose. I think my Twitter is the same too, like as the Instagram. And then our website is Terrain Health, like T-E-R-R-A-I-N health dot. And then we did create this MediCore RX site for these different products to live on. You know, and the zinc CDs, there's other products are there too that we talked about too. So they all live there so that people can access them and get them if they want to start trying it.
Excellent. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you again so much for your time. I'll note everything here to where to find and follow you, and just greatly appreciate having you here. So stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Jamelli and Dr. Robin Rose signing off.
Bye.